Brewing Network is proud to present Beer Radio that turns ordinary homebrew, into award-winning beer. The Jameel Show. Woo-hoo! And now, your hosts, Jameel Zainashef and John Plisse.
Sister. Good morning, Jay-Z.
Hey, today we're talking about Bavarian Weizens, or Hefeweizens. And before we get into that, so tell me, I didn't make it back home until probably about 2 o'clock last night from the anniversary party, and I stopped drinking around, 7:30 or so.
No, you didn't.
I did. The
did you
last
really?
Thing I had, yeah, was when we were shotgunning those 21st Amendment IPAs.
Your face, man, after that was bad.
At 7%, 76 IBU beer.
Oh, God.
went down pretty smooth.
Yeah.
Took me back to my college days, but I hear you guys had a rough time getting back.
Oh, man.
I saw the angry side, the dark side of Justin.
I flipped. Everyone was a bit surprised.
Yeah.
Well, I wanted us all to get home safe, so I had planned for the anniversary party, and I knew there was going to be a lot of people, and we wanted to have a little anniversary celebration back at the house. So I was going to rent us a van, and at least what I thought at the time, and Jameel, you can now, I should have spoken to you first maybe. As I'm calling around, I find out to rent a van is the same, a 12 to 15 passenger van is the same price as renting a 12 passenger limousine for an hour, and you don't have to worry about a designated driver.
Right.
So I went, well,
limo it is.
We'll go with the limo. Yeah. That sounds like a great deal. It was like it was supposed to be just a little bit more for a tip. You had to tip the guy.
Right.
And I figured to have a driver so that we didn't have to worry about anybody, it was worth the extra tip, you
right.
know. Well, it starts out, the guy picks us up, he ends up wanting to charge me more than
yeah.
that. He wants to charge me a late night charge. So whatever, so I argue with him a little bit about
the oil too, man.
He's got the hood open on the limo, right when he pulls up, he pops the hood, he's checking the oil, I don't know what's going on. And hangs out with me, it was a whole thing with him, just getting us into the limo.
He was a whiny little bitch too from the get-go.
Yeah. So then we get in there. We got 12 people, which is what what limo I ordered. Turns out to be a 10-person limo. Mm. We got 12 people. Two of them are fat guys.
Yeah.
Three of them actually are fat guys. So then we're riding. Oh, Jameel, is that you sitting back there laughing? So then we're driving along. We get, I don't know, 20 minutes away.
From the Bay Bridge, right off of it.
My roommate, who's in the back seat on one side of the limo, hurls all over the door, tries to get it out the window, gets it all over himself and the door.
And he had this funniest smirk on his face afterwards. The whole time, it's like, yeah.
Oh, man.
Oh.
So I tell, the limo driver doesn't know, and we ask him, hey, can you pull over? We need you to pull over. And we're yelling at him finally, because he won't pull over. We're like, you got to pull over. And he's like, you paid for direct service. I don't pull over. No stops. He's yelling at us, no stops, no stops. And I'm still talking to him nicely at this point. And I'm like, listen, I know. You got to pull over. And he's yelling at us. He's actually yelling at his customers, no stops. And I just snapped.
Yeah, you did.
Like, that was it for me. It's been a long day. Mm-hmm. This guy was a douche to begin with. And I just, I'm yelling at this guy from the back of the limo. F you, yeah. You got the hood up when you pull us over. There's no oil in your cab. I order a 12-person limo. You give me 10. You overcharge me. I got a guy puking on your seat back here. If you don't pull over, I'm coming through the window.
Yeah, but... That was well done.
And I mean, I just the whole limo goes silent except for me yelling.
I was proud of you, man. That was awesome.
Guy pulls over, and so now that wasn't even the ugly part. The guy pulls over. He opens our door, the side of the door. He opens. Oz, big giant Oz, jumps out of the limo and is about to like eat this guy's head.
Yeah,
he gets so much in his face, he's about to eat his head. Guy freaks out, picks up his cell. I'm calling the cops. He's running around the gas station. You guys are trying to kill me. I don't feel safe. This guy's going to hurt me. It was a mess. Daniela had to talk him down and so that he would still give us a... At this point, we're in downtown Oakland, about to call a bunch of cabs. It was a mess, Jamil.
So when you offered to give me a spot in the limo earlier...
Yeah. You were the smart one.
I just knew.
Oh, it was such a mess.
But what about the second guy that yacked?
So Daniela talks him down. We get back in the limo. We're almost home. We're a minute and a half away from my house. We're right around the corner. The same back seat of the limo, but the other side of the car. My roommate Joe, who was a pain in the ass all night. Not my roommate, my old friend. He pukes all over the other side of the limo. Same scene. He pukes all over.
Yeah.
A poor girl sitting in the middle of those two fat guys had just puke all around her.
Oh, Jesus Christ.
It was a mess, man. It was my worst nightmare. Oh,
almost yacked, too.
The yacking makes me sick. Yeah. You guys know how germ phobia I am. I see that. I had to jump out of the limo, run down the street, and I let up a little. Before the guy yacked, after we got back in from the gas station in Oakland, we're on the road for a mere 10 minutes. The same guy who yacked the second time, he's got a can of 2-1-8 in his hand. It's half full. He tries to chuck it out the window of the limo. He misses. It lands all over the side of the limo. He tries again, chucks it out on the in the middle of the freeway.
What a dumbass.
He is a total dumbass. The limo driver sees it. So now we're puking in his car. We're chucking beer cans out the window. Jamil, it was a mess, man.
The show was good, though.
Why don't we talk about German Weizbier, Jamil?
Yeah, I feel dirty after that whole...
I know. I'll give you even the long version later. What a mess.
Oh, man. Yeah.
It's one for the memory books.
Yeah. Yeah.
All right, so we're talking about Bavarian Weizens, or German Hefeweizens, and these are those... beers that they come from traditionally from southern Germany, Bavaria, so that's why Bavarian, right? And they come in versions that are cloudy and versions that are crystal clear. They are by law these beers have to have at least 50% wheat. So the Germans have a lot of beer laws, and they control everything from the starting gravity of a beer to ingredients, things like that. And one of them is that on these Hefeweizens, they must have 50% wheat. And commercially, you'll come across versions that are anywhere 50, 60, 70% wheat. And you have to have that in order to get the German Hefe flavor. A lot of people think it just comes from the yeast. It's yeast, and it's also the wheat, and there's a reason behind that. We'll get into that a little bit. But a German Hefe is going to have the cloudy appearance. It's going to be a pale straw, maybe into dark gold color, so anywhere in there, depending on the ingredients, whether it's decocted, things like that. They're going to have a big, huge, thick white head on them. And, again, cloudy, but that's not necessarily from the yeast. It can be from the wheat. It can be from suspended yeast, especially if you roll the bottle and they rouse the yeast before pouring. And they have crystal versions. They call them crystal Weizen, which is they filter it and they're crystal clear. The aroma, when you come across one of these beers, is going to have some... moderate phenolics to it. And phenolics are things that, in this case, a clove phenol. You know, you ever smell clove cigarettes? Well, that clove, very distinct. So a clove phenol, it's kind of, how would you describe it, John? Peppery?
It's really spicy-like.
Yeah, it's like a spicy, almost...
peppery's good.
Mm. Yeah, a little bit. It's not quite medicinal, but... You know, it's a phenol, so they all kind of have that It's a very similar kind of range.
Would you say cardboard-like, too?
No.
Like kind of bready-ish?
Well, yeah, or biscuity. No?
That, too.
And you're going to get a fruity ester, which is going to be, should be usually a banana ester in this. So the two linchpins of the Hefe aroma is clove and banana. And you might get some other fruity esters in there as well. But generally, that's what you're looking for is the clove and banana. And it shouldn't be overwhelming or solventy. It should be moderate but balanced with the other aromas. And you really won't get any hops in the aroma. You should get a wheat aroma, which can be bready, grainy, or doughy sometimes. The best ones are like a fresh baked bread. And sometimes that can be a little bit biscuity. Other than that, you're going to have a fairly clean beer. It's going to, there shouldn't be any DMS from the Pilsner malt. There shouldn't be any diacetyl. There shouldn't be any hot alcohol or anything like that. You might get other, you know, fruity characteristics, but they should just be in support of that clove, banana, and as far as flavor goes, you're going to have, again, the banana and clove, and you shouldn't have anything. Sometimes people will have a bubblegum characteristic that gets into their beer, and it can detract from the overall thing. If you're brewing this and you end up with a heavy bubble gum, I mean, a little bit is okay, but usually what that's a sign of is overly hot fermentation or weak fermentation. And I've lost you guys. I cannot hear you guys at all at this point.
Are you there?
I'm Skyping it in. Yeah, now I can hear you.
Here you are.
All right. I can hear you, John. But okay. I'm Skyping it in, you guys.
Jameel doing the Skype-y.
Yeah, again, family situation just requires me to be at home today, and unfortunately. But the show must go on. So if you hear anything weird, it's just because technology right now is just beating on us.
We're still unpacking.
Right. But actually, you guys sound better now.
Nice.
All the noise is gone.
Good. You said bubblegummy. I mean, is that
go ahead.
How hot of fermentation would produce that?
Well, you know, it's interesting on the fermentation. A lot of people ferment these things a lot warmer than they should. They believe that, you know, that's how you get, you know, more banana or more clove. And there was this whole homebrew thing about, you know, these warmer fermentation temperatures. And we'll get into it a little bit later on, but there's this 30-degree Celsius rule where your pitching temperature and your ferment temperature add up to 30. It's just this traditional rule. And what that means is you'd pitch at something like 12 degrees C, which is about 54 degrees Fahrenheit, and you would let it warm up by itself and ferment to 18 degrees C, which would be about 64 degrees Fahrenheit. And most people there fermenting their Weizens, you know, 67, 70 degrees, and that's how you end up with those too much bubble gum and all that stuff in there.
Now, if you were judging that type of, Weiss beers, I mean, do you... Well, I can't even think. I'm so fucking hungover.
Speaking of Weiss beer, is that beer?
Yeah. Beer?
Johan.
I don't think I'll have one.
I dropped the ball on that one.
Come on, chicken boy. Pull it together.
I'm trying, man. Hey, if you're judging... When you judge these style of beers in competitions... It seems like such a one single-sided type of beer. I mean, how do you even choose a Weiss beer one over the other? I mean, they're so identical, so alike.
Well,
what are you really looking for in
that's a good question. And you might ask the same thing of something like a Munich Helles or a North German Pilsner. Mm-hmm. I mean, they're very, you know, very similar stylistically across as you go across Germany. And what makes one better than the other? Now, there's other flavors in there. You know, there's a bready, grainy flavor. There's, you know, a little bit of the Pils malt sweetness will be in there. You know, all these things come together, and you just get this magical balance of, you know, the clove and the banana and the bready and, you know, the mouthfeel and the sweetness versus the hop bitterness. And, you know, it's a very subtle thing mm-hmm. across all these different seemingly minor characteristics. But when done right and when in proper balance, it's a really delicious easy drinking beer. A lot of people don't care for this style. They say, oh, I'll drink anything but a German Hefe.
Right.
And the reason is they've been drinking some bad ones. You know, right. People are making these hot, fermented, out of balance, too sweet beers. Mm-hmm. This is a beer that a Bavarian would start their breakfast with.
Nice.
You know, in the morning they'd have their, you know, pancakes or their cornflakes and a you know, half liter of Weissbier to start.
That sounds good.
You know, just like Justin, you know.
Yeah. Could use one right now.
Sorry, what? Are we drinking now?
Yeah, we are.
Is that what's happening here?
Start all over, man.
So,
what about freshness? Like the quality, like how long do these things actually age or are good for, you know, in the bottle from the time that you ferment? We were talking about this last night a little bit.
Yeah, a very short amount of time, surprisingly. These things, you need to drink them fresh. You need to brew them, give them a little time to condition, and then you should go ahead and drink them. These do not store well and do not do well over a long period of time. It's really all about that fresh, bready malt and the, you know, the clove and banana. And if you let it sit too long, especially wheat yeast. That's one of the things is these wheat yeast. If you're brewing a series of wheat beers and you want to repitch the yeast from, say, Hefeweizen to a Dunkelweizen to a Weizenbock, you need to do that really quickly in between. You cannot wait a long time. You can't take a pitch of this yeast, store it in the fridge, and expect it to be good, you know, 3-4 weeks down the road. I find after a week you get some serious loss in the yeast, and it's really pushing it. And you get to 2 weeks, past 2 weeks, you know, might as well give up on that yeast and start over. So if you're you know, repitching your yeast, that's one of the things to be very careful about.
See, that strikes me as odd because this type of yeast ferments so active,
right?
And it's, you know, I get customers all the time saying, you know, I had yeast spew all over my closet, you know, on my clothes, and every time, you know, it's just such a highly active yeast that you think it would be able to survive, but it's an interesting point.
Well,
that you made.
But that's the thing, you know, the more active it is, it's like, you know, live hard, die young, right?
Oh, there you go. Nice.
You know, you're out doing crack every day and mm-hmm. living a high-paced life like Justin, then, you know, you got to expect to be dead before you're 30.
Yeah. Well, I hope not. I hope not.
Yeah.
I hope he's not dead.
So, you know, and I think the same thing is true of yeast. Hmm. So you have to be cognizant of that fact, and you'll want to, you know, brew these and drink them fairly quickly. Don't let them sit around for a long time expecting them to get better. Usually they're pretty much at their prime shortly after your initial fermentation is done, and they're ready to go. So, getting back to the description, the body mouthfeel of this is, it's never a really sweet or big or cloying beer. This is again, should be fairly refreshing, should be, you know, it's got a nice mouthfeel to it, you know, probably medium to light mouthfeel, but, you know, a lot of that is, you know, from carbonation and the wheat and all that.
Should they be highly carbonated?
Yeah, absolutely. You're going to carbonate these to about, 3 volumes. Mm-hmm. So your average, you know, American beer is carbonated to, between 2 and 2.5.
Wow.
You know, 2.5, and these will go to 3. Kind of high, spritzy, quite a bubbly beer.
Okay.
And
I did have a question earlier, since you're talking about bubbly it is. What CO2 levels you like to have in your
lights? Right. So about 3 volumes.
Okay.
And that's going to vary based on, you know, how much residual sugar there is and, you know, how many IBUs. And the thing I like to do, and one of the great reasons to have a kegging system, is that you can start out at a certain CO2 level and check it each day, you know, try a little bit, see how it's coming along. And there will be a point where it'll get to, you know, just seems really right. It's not overly carbonated, not undercarbonated. It seems to blend in with the rest of the character of the beer, depending on how dry it is or, you know, how much residual sugar there is. And then, you know, that's the point. And it doesn't really matter, you know, what the recipe calls for. It's going to be slightly different depending on how the rest of the process went. And you get past that point, then it starts getting kind of acidic and biting and a little too much CO2. You get that carbonic bite.
Right.
And, then you know you've gone too far.
Okay.
And that's when you need to back off on it. But, again, a kegging system allows you to do that.
Right.
It's one of the great purchases. I would buy a kegging system before I'd buy, like, a conical fermenter or anything along those lines.
Well, yeah, draft beer, I mean, it's God's gift to us.
Yeah, there's nothing better than that.
Now, if you were to counter-pressure fill, would you suggest, I was just thinking of this, like, stirring up your keg to get the yeast back in suspension that falls out?
Yeah, you can. You know what the major producers do is they actually filter out their Hefe yeast, and then they add back in lager yeast. And the reason they do this is that the lager yeast is a little more stable, and the Hefe yeast dies really quick, remember?
Right.
And the lager yeast tends to be fairly dusty in its character. It doesn't form like big clumps like an English ale yeast. So when you have that in the bottle, it'll, you know, resuspend easily and, you know, have a nice look to it. So that's why they filter it out and then add back some lager yeast, a determined amount of lager yeast.
They do that just for, like, looks and flavor? Not necessarily carbonation, but just for, like, a preservative?
Right, yeah. You know, some will bottle condition with that lager yeast, but, for others, it's just having that, yeast in there. And what happens is if you've got a bottle of Hefe and, you know, the yeast is sedimented to the bottom, you're supposed to roll it on the bar first to rouse the yeast and then pour it and resuspend that yeast. So, in competition, I don't see this very often. It depends on the judges. Some judges will have them rouse the yeast. Some of them won't.
But they should then.
Yeah, hard to say. You know, the yeast, it has a flavor to it.
Right.
And, you know, it could be, with the right amount of yeast, it's a nice part. It adds to that yeasty, bready character, adds to the mouthfeel, adds to that. And it can be good. But if you have too much yeast or the yeast has started to die off, if you haven't filtered out the Weizen yeast and, you know, put in a more stable yeast, the yeast could be dying off, and it could be unpleasant.
Hey, so, Jamil, you want to keep rocking and rolling, or you want to take a break today?
Well, let's take a break.
Okay.
And a short break, and then when we come back, we'll get into the recipe.
Very good. The Jamil Show. We'll be right back.
Wow! I feel good. I knew that I wouldn't.
Now, back to the Jamil Show.
I feel good.
All right, we're back. We're talking about Bavarian Hefeweizen.
Yes.
And next we're going to talk about the recipe. And the recipe for this is actually fairly simple. You're going to use about 50% Pilsner malt, continental Pilsner malt, so something from Europe, Durst Pilsner or Weirmann Pilsner, and 50% wheat malt, not unmalted wheat, but malted wheat, wheat malt. And it's very important that you have at least 50% wheat malt to be a true Bavarian Hefeweizen. This is by law in Germany, and there is a practical reason for this. And the reason is ferulic acid. In order to get the flavors, in order for the yeast to produce that clove and banana, they need the ferulic acid. And the ferulic acid comes from the wheat malt. So in order to get that characteristic, you're going to have 50% wheat malt. You can go more. You can go 60, 70%. Past that point, it gets kind of difficult to work with wheat because there's no husk to them. And you can end up with a stuck mash. And you're going to want to use rice hulls in that case, maybe. If you're doing an extract-based beer, they have wheat malt extracts, and they have Pilsner malt extracts. So they have, I know Moorbeer sells a Durst Pilsner extract. I know Bries makes a nice Pilsner extract, and they also make a wheat extract. And you can take the, you know, a 50% Pilsner malt extract and a 50% wheat malt extract, and you use those together and make a very fine German Hefeweizen from those. As far as hops go, you're going to want to use a traditional German hop, something like a Hallertauer Mittelfrüh if you can get it, or Hallertauer Tradition, or Tettnang. Those are all good hops for this style. And it's all really just used for bittering, but some of that does come across in the flavor. So you're going to use, you know, in a 10-53, you know, 13 Plato wort, you're going to use about 15 IBUs of bittering in there.
That's very light.
And that's just going to balance out that residual sweetness, provide a very slight touch of a traditional German hop flavor. Again, this is not about hop flavor in this style. And if you get none, that's fine too. But sometimes you can detect a little bit through there. That's why you use that traditional German hop. And then for yeast, you're going to ferment with traditional German Hefe yeast. I'll get into that in detail in a little bit. As far as processing the grains, if you use an extract, you just go straight to the kettle. You're good to go. If you're doing all grain or partial mash, you're going to you can do single infusion, which is what I generally do, and I get good results. And I go with 152 degrees Fahrenheit or 67 degrees Celsius in order to convert the sugars, and that gives me a pretty good balance of residual dextrin, or, you know, long chain dextrins to short chains, and leaves you with enough of a mouthfeel to be appropriate. You know, some systems are going to be a little thicker or thinner, so you may have to adjust from that. But I believe when I first started brewing German Hefes, I did not do very well with this style. And I tried all sorts of different things, and I ran into all sorts of different problems. And I finally, a good friend of mine down in San Diego, Harold Gobranson, he had entered a smoked Hefeweizen in a competition that I judged. And after I found out it was his, you know, I asked him about it. And the smoked character was nice and balanced with the rest of the beer. But what was great about it was that the Hefe character was just flawless. It had that wonderful bread character. It had a beautiful balance of the clove and the banana. None were overwhelming in one way or another. And the overall character of the beer just was perfect. And he started sharing all his secrets on this. And actually, he has no secrets. He tells anybody freely. But he started telling me you know, all the things that I was missing on this. And I was making the beer too complex, and I was doing, you know, a lot of things that really didn't work out. But one of the things that he
believes is critical to the style is a decoction mash. And I've heard this from others that there's a couple of styles of beer where you really need a decoction, and one of them is the German Hefeweizen. And you can do a single decoction, and that decoction is you pull out the thickest part of the mash into a separate pot, and you hold it at the sack rest temperature, and then you boil it for 20 minutes, and then you add it back to your main mash. And what this does is form other melanoidins and builds up that bready, malty character in the beer. And a lot of people believe that is critical to the style.
Is that what they do in Germany?
My understanding is, I've read things that say, well, you know, they all do it. And I'm not sure if that's true anymore, but some of the stuff I read in the past said that all German brewers, in order to brew a Hefeweizen, did a decoction.
Hmm.
So, you know, they may be changing that nowadays. So decoction, maybe, you know, if you want to play around with the decoction, this might be an interesting beer to do that with. The ferulic acid is...
How do you spell that?
F-E-R-U-L-I-C.
Okay.
Use it in a sentence.
Yeah.
Yeah, I'm sure there's a lot of ferulic acid in Joe's spew in the limo.
I'm sure the bill will talk all about it. Find out.
That is actually separated from the malt... ideally at 111 degrees Fahrenheit, which is, I think, 44 degrees Celsius, and at about 5.6 or 7 pH is where optimum ferulic acid production is going to happen. So if you're into that, you could do a rest around 111, or you can do maybe a protein rest around 122, and then go up to 122 Fahrenheit, 50 degrees Celsius, then do a rest at maybe 149 Fahrenheit, 65 degrees Celsius, and then 158 Fahrenheit, 7 degrees Celsius. Or you could do the 50, 60, 70 thing that we talked about in the last show, which is kind of traditional for a lot of German beers and mashing programs go 50, 60, 70 degrees Celsius.
Sure, it's a lot of work for a wheat beer.
Well, yeah. Why would a wheat beer be less deserving of work?
I don't know.
Oh, come on, Jamil. Everybody knows that.
Yeah, Jamil.
Yeah,
just biased, that's all.
Yeah, yeah, well, and that's the thing. I think people have kind of come to look down on this style because there's not a lot of good ones being made in the U.S. right now.
And even the imported ones are already past their prime.
Exactly. They don't travel very well.
Yeah.
So the ones you get, you know, a good, fresh Bavarian Hefeweizen in Bavaria is, you know, just, wow, it's a great thing. It's really, well done. And it just doesn't do well in the bottle because of, you know, some of the things we said. And, I mean, you can get some pretty decent ones. You know,
Gordon Biersch.
Yeah,
Gordon Biersch. Just talking in the chat room. I think a good German Hef comes out of Gordon Biersch.
Yeah, you just got that out, huh?
The traditional examples are like Schneiderweiss, the Paulaner, Hackershore. There's a number of them. And, those, if you can get them fresh or relatively fresh, those are pretty good. Hmm. And, if done right, any beer style is a great beer, a great drinking beer, and something you'll come to love. And the reason I think people settle on certain styles is they can get really good examples of them, really well done examples. And they go, wow, yeah, they start making good examples of them through knowledge or luck or whatever, and it just turns out great. And so they become enamored of those styles, and they don't like the other styles. They don't like the other styles because they're not coming across good examples of them, or it's difficult to make a good example of it. So that's why they're not into them.
I got questions for you from the chat room. You want them now?
why don't we hold on? Let me go through fermentation, and then I think that's pretty much everything.
All right, you go for it.
All right, so fermentation is, again, now this is where Harold really helped me out a lot, was he convinced me of this, you know, 30 degree Celsius rule and the importance of fermenting these things relatively cold, in my opinion, because this is an ale, and you're thinking ale, oh, well, you know, 60, you know, upper 60s is cool for an ale. Harold ferments his. He goes straight to 62 degrees Fahrenheit, holds it there, and I tried that, and it made a world of difference in my beer. Went from brewing crappy, non-viable, competition-wise beers at 67, which is what, you know, the general homebrew consensus was with everybody else I was talking to brewing just a beautiful, balanced, great drinking beer at 62 degrees Fahrenheit. And they ferment quite well at that temperature. So the 30 degree centigrade rule or Celsius rule is your pitching temperature and your fermentation temperature need to equal 30 when you add them up. So you might pitch your yeast at 54 degrees Fahrenheit, 12 degrees C, and then let it naturally rise up through fermentation temperature to 64 degrees Fahrenheit or 18 C. So 12 and 18 equal 30.
Okay.
So you can change this if you want to ferment cooler around, you know, 63 or 62 degrees Fahrenheit. You can, you know, pitch at 13 degrees C, 56 degrees Fahrenheit, and let it rise up to 17 degrees.
Does this apply to all style of beers? Like,
no, I've only heard this in relationship to Hefe.
Okay.
Bavarian Hefeweizen. So, you know, 13 and 17 equals 30.
See, I talked to Dan Gorin, and he even said to do it with ales. You know, we were talking last week about pitching cold and how you bring it up, too. He said to even do that with ales.
Yeah, you know, I think in a lot of ales, though, you really do want a certain estuary profile. And if you're too controlled, especially, you know, unless you're trying to do something really clean, it doesn't hurt to, I guess, to pitch it cold and bring it up. But on ales, I haven't been convinced of the need to do that.
Okay.
I really see the value in lagers, but not necessarily in ales. But maybe I'm wrong on that.
Okay. But in this style, definitely do that.
So in this style, you can definitely do that, and I see where that makes a difference on controlling those phenolics and those esters. I've had great success just pitching and holding it at 62 degrees Fahrenheit. As well. So you can do that 30 degrees C rule or, you know, 62 degrees Fahrenheit. As far as the yeast that you want to use, there's some very good yeasts out there from White Labs and Y Yeast. I would go with, personally, I would use either the WLP 300 White Labs Hefe or the Y Yeast 3068. And those are the traditional German wheat yeasts. These are what the majority of those major German, Bavarian, Weizen companies are brewing.
What about the other ones?
WLP, White Labs, 351 or 380. You know, some of them are less flocculent. Some of them are a little sweeter. Some of them, you know, they have different banana clove characteristics. Mm-hmm. On Y yeast, you're looking at the 3638 or the 3056. All those are good choices, and, you know, if you are lucky enough to have, like, the ability to make a, you know, 50 g of wort, and you have, like, 10 carboys, you could, you know, try different yeast in each one, or even if you've got, you know, 10 gallons of wort and, you know, a couple of carboys, you could split that up and try a couple of different yeasts, see what you like. You should probably do that the first time you do it, or stick with the traditional 3068 or the 300, and that would get you good results at 62 degrees. The one thing to be careful of, there is a yeast labeled American Hefe, which is I think White Labs 320,
right?
And that American Hefe is not the yeast to use for this. Okay, this is a Bavarian Weizen, and it requires those clove and banana characteristics. I think the American Hef is supposed to give you a real subtle dose of that, but really you're better off with using the traditional yeast. And one other thing I want to say about these is there's some weird misconception out there that using wheat in a beer somehow makes the beer sour or tart, which is just nonsense in my opinion. And I don't know where that came from, but I'd seen that in the past, and I think it's starting to get, you know, eliminated from the popular beliefs. But, you know, wheat in itself, you know, if you eat a loaf of bread, is it sour? You know, it's not. If you make 100% wheat beer, it won't be sour. You know, there is no sourness in wheat. Now, you could have contaminants, or you can have yeast that will give you a tangy ester, or, you know, characteristic like that, and you know, some of the acids that are naturally occurring in the beer. But I don't think you're going to get a sour beer because you used yeast. That's just not true. So don't worry about using 50, 60, or 70% yeast, wheat malt in this.
I will never tell a customer the wrong info ever again.
Have you said that?
Yeah.
That if you put wheat in it, you'll get sour beer?
Well, and that, you know, that's
Doc
just
had talked about it a little bit.
That's just something that people you know, have talked about for years. I don't know where it came from, but you know, it just keeps getting repeated. And that's not anybody's fault, but you know, if you try and make 100% wheat beer, there's no sourness to it. Hmm. So I don't know where that would come from. And there are a couple 100% wheat beers out there. Doesn't Marin or Moylan's make wheat wine? Which is actually quite good.
Wheat wine, huh?
Wheat wine. It's 100% wheat.
Yeah. I'll give you
that. And wheat will convert itself. It's you don't need anything other than wheat and some rice hulls.
Converts itself right inside my belly is the problem.
Yeah,
me.
It does. low gluten tolerance?
I don't know what it is. You want some questions, Jamil? Got a few to get
yeah.
to.
Yeah.
All right.
Yeah.
One of the big ones was you ever used Schneider Weiss yeast in your beers, and what do you think of that if you have?
Well, the Schneider Weiss, isn't that the 3068 Y yeast?
I don't know. John, do you know that?
No, I haven't.
He has no idea.
Jamil would know.
Is that what they cloned it from? They took it from Schneider Weiss? Is that what you're saying?
I they don't have their, exact, list of who's...
Right.
Yeah, who's what, but...
They're sneaky.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I believe that that is that yeast.
Okay. Okay. And is that, that's one of the ones you recommended then anyway?
Yeah, I would go with the 3068. If you're not going to do a comparison of the yeasts, I would just go 3068 or WLP 300.
Okay. Dr. Scott adds flour to his wit to get some haze. He adds flour to the boil.
Right.
What do you think about that for this style of beer to get some of that haze?
Don't. It's unmalted wheat, and you really don't want a starch haze like that. And if you use 50, 60, 70% wheat, you'll end up with a hazy enough beer. And then part of this is also you're supposed to rouse the yeast, and the yeast is supposed to be in suspension.
Mm-hmm.
So. If you ferment this and once you're done with your fermentation, if you start drinking it right after that, it'll be hazy enough. I wouldn't worry about that.
Okay. And how about
and if it ends up crystal clear, just call it a crystal Weizen.
Oh yeah, there you go. That's you what some company in the Oregon area did with theirs, didn't they?
Right.
What other beers can you ferment with a wheat beer yeast? Anything? Is it good for anything else?
Well, you can do Rogan beer, which is a Hefeweizen with portion of it being rye instead of wheat. And you could do a Dunkelweizen, which is a darker version of a Bavarian Hefeweizen. You do a Weizenbock, which is a big Bock-like Hefe, mm-hmm. which is also good. You could ferment anything you want, but those are really the beers that would be to style with this.
Okay. I know you don't have the list in front of you. The chat room is saying, possibly as a correction, that 3068 is Weinstephan and 3638 is Schneider Weiss.
Oh, okay.
So those of you listeners.
Well, then that's probably the case. Yeah. I don't have that.
Yeah, they might be looking it up. So, okay, and then for anybody to answer here, a little bit off topic, was a question that came through. Are there any good resources that you folks like to use to convert all grain recipes to extract, which I would assume you could convert either way if it's a good resource?
Yeah, they have, if you have something like ProMash, you can just, eliminate the base grain and add in extract until the final gravity number is the same. That's an easy way to do it. They also have brewing spreadsheets out there that are for free that you can download off the internet that'll help you do the same thing. Just delete the base pale malt, so you'll have if it says English pale malt or Maris Otter or something like that, get yourself a Maris Otter extract and just same amount of gravity points. If you have Pilsner malt as a base malt, then replace it with a Pilsner malt extract. If you have an American two-row base malt, replace it with an ultralight like Alexander's ultralight extract, and that will cover most of those cases. You can the calculation is fairly simple. If you know what you need to know in the all grain recipe is this amount of base malt, they're calculating this recipe at what efficiency? And, if you're 70% efficiency, you're getting 70% of the potential of that base malt. And if you're at 65%, you're getting 65% of it, or 80%, you're getting 80% of it. And the thing is, that's going to vary how many points of extract that equals. And with extract, it's always pretty much the same. You get a certain amount of extract, you dump it in, you get X number of points. And so for the extract brewer, it's kind of tricky because they're looking at these all-grain recipes and they don't know what it was calculated out as efficiency-wise. And they don't know how much to replace with. So if you have to have a piece of information. If you do, then one of these spreadsheets makes it really easy.
You just do a search for beer spreadsheets or what?
Yeah, and ask around. Get on one of the forums and say, hey, anybody know of any good beer recipe spreadsheets or beer calculations?
Okay.
And there's a bunch of them. People do them, and there's ones that are done in Excel. So if you have Excel, do it that way. There's some that are online. I think what is it called? Beertools.com or something like that.
Yeah, that's a cool site, actually.
Don't they have a calculator there?
They do, the whole recipe calculator.
Right. So, something like that will work.
Somebody in the chat saying brewery.org has conversion charts over there.
There you go.
So brewery.org for that one. They just got the charts right there.
Yeah, there's a ton of information out there.
Okay. All right, Jamil, next time one of my favorites is Kolsch.
Oh, actually, we've switched that.
Oh, you did?
To Dusseldorf Alt Beer.
Nice.
Oh, okay.
Because some listeners had requested Dusseldorf Alt Beer.
So are you pushing everything down then, or are you just taking out Kolsch?
Taking out Kolsch Dusseldorf Alt Beer.
You bastard.
Alt
beers are good too.
Yeah.
Well, I'll tell you what. I happen to brew 10 gallons of Kolsch.
Mm-hmm.
And you know what happens when I brew 10 gallons?
I get 5.
That's right.
Yes!
So, and it turned out pretty good.
And I get 5, too.
Jamil, you get to
get the high five.
Cool. Oh, that's awesome.
Yeah. So, on Bavarian Weizen,
yeah.
Really what you want to do is, the way I would do this is, I'd go with a 50% wheat malt, 50% continental Pilsner malt. I would, 50% wheat extract and 50% Pilsner extract. I'd IBU it with traditional German hop like Hallertau or Mittelfrüh, which is what I use, to about 15 IBUs. And I would just put this in at the 60-minute mark. I'd boil this whole thing only for maybe 65 minutes, 5 minutes, and then put your hops in, and then the rest of the 60 minutes, and that would be it. I would ferment it around 62 degrees Fahrenheit with White Yeast 3068 or the WLP 300, and I would carbonate it in the keg to around 3 volumes and until it tastes just right, and I'd drink it up and have a great time, enjoy it. And I'd have a liter each morning with my Wheaties, and that's how I would do the Bavarian Weizen.
I would drink it up and have a good time doing it. That's good advice.
That's right.
Just replace
all right,
the milk.
So coming up next, are you going to do a repeat of the Sunday show?
No, I don't have it.
Oh. And, well, tomorrow, then tune in around 10 o'clock for the Graham Sanders Oz Craft Brewer Show.
And I'll do a repeat of the Sunday show after that one.
All right.
Thanks, Jamil.
Great. Thank you, guys.
See you, Jamil.
All right.
The Jamil Show has been a production of the Brewing Network. Please send questions for Jamil to jamil@thebrewingnetwork.com. The Jamil Show airs live every other Monday at 10 a.m. Pacific, 1 p.m. Eastern, right here on the Brewing Network.